So nice to sit together. I wanted to share briefly. I don't think you can hear it, but there's a lot of noise between wood chippers and chainsaws, and there seemed to be a little neighborhood party outside my window, and it's a usually pretty quiet street. And part of me was like, oh, I should have done sound meditation, because it was just for me watching the ear, like, I wish they'd be quiet, and it's like unpleasant. And then they're laughing like, oh, pleasant. And just sort of what I love about working with the Vedanas is it's very portable. So when we're in situations like, I was going to say crowds, but not really in crowds so much anymore, but in situations where it's like, this is really unpleasant, to just work with it. Oh yeah, it's just unpleasant. Okay, as a way of kind of cutting through the chatter of the noise that wants to have an opinion about something. And this is actually related to what I want to talk about today, in staying in the realm of Christina's book, Boundless Heart, which I think I've been quoting from every week for the last month, and we're nearing the end of the book. Oh my God. But this fourth of Brahma Vihara, of equanimities and of equanimity, and Brahma Vihara being the divine abodes, the four residences of the awakened heart, of loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity. In the Pali words are metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. And upekkha is said to be the crown jewel of these four qualities of the heart, as it lends a steadiness and a balance to friendliness that can move into attachment of how we want a certain outcome, or compassion, like devastation that can come if we get too connected, not too empathetic, but too much down the rabbit hole of feeling another suffering. That equanimity is like, no, no, stay steady. There are limits to what we can do. And with mudita, the sympathetic joy, equanimity can bring a balance, that what can come sometimes with it, sort of an exuberance, can be a little bit off. We can lose our center. And equanimity is like, no, come back. Again, that line, can we create a clearing in the dense busyness of our lives? And to me, that's equanimity. Another poem I won't share, because I think I share it all the time, but about the little duck that cuddles in the swells, the heaving of the Atlantic. And that's sort of like, how do we kind of sit down in the middleness of all that's happening? And oh, there's so much that's happening, right? I'll just share this morning, I wake up pretty early and just woke up and had that sense of dread of like, ah, the fire's here. It's rough here in California with the fires and the air quality, as I know it is many other places. What's happening with the Delta variant and all these things, the conditions in the world of earthquakes and Afghanistan, and just an awareness of dread, and then just sort of like, yeah, unpleasant. And how do we navigate these pretty challenging times without dropping into or swimming too far into the deep waters of despair and hopelessness? And again, this Vedana of just noticing, oh, this is unpleasant. Okay. Again, a way of just stopping the story, because we can have stories running all the time about ourselves, about other people, about events in the world. And sometimes they're useful, sometimes they're not. In this amazing capacity to be able to watch the thinking mind and be able to choose, is this helpful? What I'm perseverating about of any use, the worrying that I have, is that helping so much? And I was re-listening to another favorite book, Pema Chodron's Don't Bite the Hook. I think it's only available on audio. And she had a line that wasn't hers, but she shared of, as humans, we walk around with a constant potential to be bothered, which I was laughing about as I was thinking about my neighbors and the part of me being bothered. It's like, this is my opinion. And I just love that that's our propensity, is to look around and scan for, how is something going to bother me? Just, I love that pointing, the teaching of, yeah, that's just part of being human. Can we give ourselves a break about it, not take ourselves quite so seriously when we do get bothered? And where Pema Chodron's talking in the part of her book is, how do we watch how vulnerable we are to being bothered, and how do we strengthen our capacity to not be quite so bothered as much? And it, that we all know times and places and conditions where we can, everything bothered us. And generally it's if we're really tired or we're hungry or uncomfortable in some way, there's a vulnerability that comes, a shorter fuse, as it were. And if we lean into the teachings around the paramis, which are the 10 perfections of the enlightened heart, one of which is patience. And I think in this summer, I've talked some about patience and just how useful it is. Can we be patient with the parts of us that gets irritated and bothered? We don't have to make it a problem. Or when we get angry, we don't need to make it a problem. Either I shouldn't be angry, or I hate feeling angry, or I love feeling angry because there's all this energy. And it's just like, it's energy. Okay. Can we hold ourselves? Can we be patient with ourselves to be able to sit with, this is unpleasant? That's usually where we get reactive. When it's pleasant, it's like, woo, we want to hold on and stay there. So that's a different kind of suffering, but the grasping, like, I hope this doesn't end. And it will. And that's another venue, avenue. But just this way in which we can be so reactive and want to fix the reactivity. And as a, with working with my daughter who's 13, and there can be suffering in the world of a 13-year-old, and my temptation to want to jump in, like, can I fix this? That's the last thing she wants. I don't actually want to do it either. But that impulse to jump in because of the tolerating the unpleasant is hard, right? Whether it's in the suffering of those people we love or whether it's our own suffering. And equanimity can be really helpful as a way of, okay, can I sit down in the middleness of the unpleasantness? Because it will also be, can I sit down in the pleasantness to be awake to it and know it's going to pass? All things that arise will pass away. All the relationships that we are in will end. It's interesting to me that both Christina Feldman and Pema Chodron talk about a painting that I have shared the image of before, of a picture of a woman standing by the bank of a river, and her child is in the river, clearly looking like the child will be swept out, but the mother has no arms. And the first time I was listening to Christina talk about it, I was like, oh, I had this very visceral reaction of, oh my God. And in Christina's book, I don't know if it's in the book, but in her talks, she's like, this is equanimity. This is us, all of us in some form or another are that woman on the bank with no arms watching someone suffer. And as she relates to the painting, she points to it as, this is equanimity. We have limits of what we can do. And that, oh, what do you mean? The panic or my own visceral reaction that comes up in response to that painting of how can we sit down with, okay, this is how it is. Pema Chodron, and what I was listening to earlier, she uses it as an illustration of compassion, that in the way that we may have responded to that image, what comes up, that sense of some connection for the image of the woman, of what can we do? That's the quivering of the heart, right? That's the sense of compassion. And it doesn't really matter which category it goes in, because this is all about how the heart responds to what's happening. And again and again, I personally just lean on these teachings as, how can I monitor how I react, how I respond, and can I respond in a way that's skillful? Sometimes yes, sometimes not, but really being able to have that as like, oh, this is an actual tangible result of the practice, when there are moments when we can just sit back and not act and be able to sit and, yeah, it's hard. There is suffering. It doesn't mean we don't do anything. It just means we're not driven from that reactive place. I'm going to share a little bit from this book. Oh, perfect. So the universal vulnerability, that this is Christina writing, It is the domain, the second critical dimension of equanimity is in the domain of human relationships, the sphere of our lives where we often feel the most shattered by both love and hate. We are relational and emotional beings. Of all the Brahma, all of the Brahma Viharas only have one direction, a life of deeper connectedness. Equanimity is concerned not with emotional flatness, not with a like, yeah, whatever. It's not indifference. That's the near enemy of equanimity. But so it's not concerned with an emotional flatness, but with emotional intelligence and freedom. And I love her for how she phrases that, right? How can we allow ourselves in working with equanimity to feel a deeper sense of freedom because we have more choice of how we are, how we relate to things, and the cultivation of a deeper intelligence. And part of what Pema Chogyam talks about is how, if something's bothering us, and I'll stay with noises because I think we can all kind of relate to noises. I don't need to name some particularly annoying noises, but we all know that feeling. And the stories we put to it, and she kind of tells a funny story. Like if you're walking along and you get hit by a branch and you look up and it just, the branch fell. And you're like, oh, you don't start yelling at the tree for dropping a branch on your head. If you were walking by and got hit by a branch and looked up and saw someone that had thrown the branch at your head, you'd probably get really angry at the person who threw it at you. And she's just like, you still got hit in the head with a branch. But the ways that we can have a story of, well, that person shouldn't have done that. And what were they doing there? You know, we can get really caught up in the story of how things should be. I've shared the story before, but I love it. Michelle McDonald, who I sat a lot with in the beginning of my practice, she used to come to Spirit Rock, tells a story of sitting at Vallecitos, a retreat center that I highly recommend, gorgeous, in New Mexico. And while she's leading a sit, there was this noise, like a, she assumed it was someone in the kitchen. I don't know if you can hear my hands clapping. She assumed it was a noise of someone in the kitchen. And she was like, what are they doing? And it's super annoying. And don't they know we're sitting? And she had the whole monologue of irateness in her mind. And she could watch the discomfort in the yogis. Like everyone's kind of agitated because this cook is banging something in the kitchen. And isn't that irritating? And she let the room was pretty jostled in her sense. So she ended the sit early. And she walked outside in the deck and there was a dog whose tail was like thump, 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 thump. And she laughed and telling the story. She's like, if I had known it was the dog's tail, I would have been fine with it. But because she thought it was some cook being irritated, irritating, she got all worked up. And being able to, here's where, if we can allow in a sense of patience and equanimity, and Pema Chogyam uses tolerance for, that's annoying. What's my story about it? Am I running some story about what's happening out there and someone's doing something to me and I'm annoyed? That's a lot of energy that can kind of wind us up. Whereas if we can just, oh, this is unpleasant. Okay. We don't have to have a whole story about what it is that's going on. So again, in that is a pointing of that sort of emotional intelligence that can come. We can take care of the ground that our own thoughts and words and acts arise from, letting them be born out of kindness, compassion, and joy, and cultivating the inner balance that can live in the midst of unruly and difficult people without being broken. So maintaining that sense of inner balance, because we know there are going to be annoying and difficult and irritating people, annoying and difficult and like challenging, deeply challenging circumstances. That's a given. They're not going anywhere. It's all about how do we respond, which gives us the agency to decide. It makes us much less vulnerable to the worldly winds of things that happen to us, that it allows us to, despite what's happening and despite the people out there, the externalities of our lives, our work situation, our housing situation, relationships, to be able to say, I can still take care of the ground from which I respond. This, again, does not point to just accepting everything and kind of the doormat version of living. That's not this at all. It's discernment still comes in, the capacity to discern from our place of cultivated emotional intelligence and wisdom to be able to make choices of, is the situation good for me or not? And I don't know why I've been speaking about this a lot recently, and I apologize, but I remember in my marriage, a sense of, can I make it work? This is me. These are my preferences. Can I sit enough retreats to be able to kind of transcend my preferences such that this could work? And there's a trick there, because there's a, like, an inverse spiritual bypass. Like, if I can just lean enough into the practice, then I could stay in a situation that actually, from a place of wisdom, wasn't right. And there's a trickiness there, because it's how to be able to have enough space and patience to really understand what's the impulse to move or to make a change, and honoring there are times where there is wisdom and, like, yes, this is the movement, whether it's whether we move ourselves physically from one city to another, or whatever the myriad of ways we have transitions and changes in our lives, being able to slow down enough, feel a sense of balance and equanimity to be able to listen to the voices within us that arise from wisdom rather than reactivity. And I've been working with a guy, John Lockley, a shaman, who was asking me a question about checking in about something, I think, about how the heart was. And he's like, if you get a monologue, it's the ego. Don't listen to that. It's the one word, or it's the two word, or it's the picture, or it's the image, or it's a color. That's a different language from which we can attune to, which I thought was sweet. So when we are checking in with ourselves about what's true, and I agree with them, like, when it's a long, like, oh, da, 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 whole story, like, chances are that might not be kind of the heart or soul wisdom. So how to attune to dropping down again, dropping down out of the agitation of the surface waters to drop down. There's another piece from her book. I could just read this chapter. Equanimity coupled with mindfulness and curiosity guides us to find the courage to question these constructed worlds of our stories, which are so easily given the authority to guide and determine our choices, our actions, our speech, and our ways of responding. This is a little bit of an echo from what I read last week, a different, last week, I think, I forget, it was a different, I'll read instead of qualifying it, but the sense of what we, this is from the Buddha, what we contact, we feel, what we feel, we perceive, what we perceive, we think about, what we think about, we proliferate about, what we proliferate about, we dwell upon, what we dwell upon becomes the shape of our mind. The shape of our mind becomes the shape of our world. Shape of our mind becomes the shape of our world. How are we shaping our mind? What choices can we make that can allow us to be the architect of that particular shape, rather than allowing the externalities of our world to be what shapes us? And speaking the last few weeks about joy, there's a way of that line of, like, don't let anyone steal your joy, to allow that, whatever the shape is that you might want of your mind, to allow yourself to be the designer of that. And I'm going to share this poem, and I have shared it before, but I don't think for a while. And thinking about, I know Sonia has shared about her family of Afghani folks that she's taken in, and they went back to Afghanistan. And I've definitely been wondering, are they okay, and what's happening in Afghanistan? And apparently I just read there, 2.5 million, 2.4 million refugees in Afghanistan. So I'm going to read this in its completion, this poem that's called Refugees by Brian Bilstone. They have no need of our help, so don't tell me these haggard faces could belong to you or to me, should life have dealt a different hand. We need to see them for who they really are, chancers and scroungers, layabouts and loungers with bombs up their sleeves, cutthroats and thieves. They're not welcome here. We should not make them, we should make them go back to where they come from. They cannot share our food, share our homes, share our countries. Instead, let us build a wall to keep them out. It's not okay to say these people are just like this. These people are just like us. A place should only belong to those who are born here. Don't be so stupid to think that the world can be looked at another way. And then the invitation with this poem is to read it. That's top to bottom, reading it bottom to top. the world can be looked at another way. Don't be so stupid to think that a place should only belong to those who are born there. These are people just like the us. It's not okay to say build a wall to keep them up. I'm sorry. It's not okay to say build a wall to keep them out. Instead, let us share our country, share our home, share our food. They cannot go back where they came from. We should make them welcome here. They are not cutthroats and thieves with bombs up their sleeves, layabouts and loungers, chancers and scroungers. We need to see them for who they really are. Should life have dealt a different hand, these haggard faces could belong to you or me. So do not tell me they have no need of our help. Right? What's our perspective? We can tell a story one way, we can flip it, we can tell a story another way. Which way allows us to have a sense of heart opening and connection? Which way allows us to live from a place that is rooted in our own values, that is the ground that we can feel at home in? So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And to consider the stories that you may be frequently telling to yourself about yourself, who and how you are in the world, or stories you may tell yourself or others about a group that is different from you, a group that has different views, a group that has different skin color, a group that has different political resources or economic resources, a group that may live somewhere other than where you live. This conditioning, the habit of the mind, the ways in which we can other, make a distinction. I'm not like them, they're not like me. I'm not good enough. All the ways we can denigrate ourselves. To consider when we live from that place, these people over there scare me. They're not right. They're wrong. The way they think is wrong. What's the shape of our mind? If we live in the world, if we live from a mindset that's more open, accepting, welcoming, willing to question our beliefs, question the fixity of our views. Does that shape change? Perhaps a better way to investigate this is, if you were to pick a shape of your mind, what shape would that be? And to play around, as I'm doing right now, with different shapes. What does it feel like? The triangle, the square, the hexagon, whatever shapes may be coming to mind to kind of play and intentionally being playful here. What is a shape that most matches the values that you have? What is the shape that most matches how your heart wants to lead? What's the shape that represents how you can share your gifts, your wisdom, your heart with the world? That shape. And can you allow yourself to play there for a moment with this shape as a way, as a talisman, really, so that when we do, as we will, get caught in stories about what myself or another person, to be able to play, is this in keeping with that shape? Am I distorting it in a way that is not congruent with how I actually want to show up Am I distorting the shape in a way? Is it betrayal of how I actually and truly want to show up in a world that is so worthy of rescue, in a world that is so in need of kindness? So, thank you so much for coming with me on that little journey, and I very much appreciate your kind attention and would love to open it up to any practice questions that you may have, or just in general what came up in this talk and how you're doing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.